And if we had the time, I would tell you about the life of one of America's perhaps most renowned defense attorneys for all people of every race who fight for freedom and liberation and social justice, the chief legal counsel for Mumia Abu-Jamal, one of the finest attorneys and social justice fighters, Leonard Weinglass.
It's really an honor tonight to stand here before two victims of this justice system who happily have been returned to us, Angela and Reuben Carter. And to hear from Geronimo Pratt, and to think as well of the many others who are in prison, the 2 million, as Angela mentioned, and the 3,500 are on death row, and to realize that if Mumia were free tonight, he would be standing here, I'm sure, arguing for the freedom of all the rest, the political prisoners, and those who've been unjustly convicted and are locked up in American prisons. But I've been asked to speak about where the case stands and what are the prospects. And it's easy tonight to do so because Reuben Hurricane Carter is with us tonight. And we have to remember that after nearly 20 years in prison, his case came before a single federal judge on a petition for habeas corpus. And that federal judge finally, after nearly two decades, reviewed the record of his case and said this case cannot stand and Reuben Carter must be freed. And the parallels to Mumia's case are that Mumia's case, after 19 years, is coming before a federal judge within the next 60 days, sitting in the city of Philadelphia by way of the same legal vehicle, a petition for habeas corpus, asking that judge to look at this record and to say that this case cannot stand and that Mumia must receive a new trial or be freed. Reuben Carter was freed in 1985. Is there any difference in the intervening 14 years, 15 years between that date and today? And the answer is, for Mumia, yes. A significant difference. Because the rules of habeas corpus, which freed Reuben Carter, have been changed, practically removed. And briefly, what is this habeas corpus? This is a basic, fundamental human right that every American was given in the body of the Constitution, not in the Bill of Rights. It didn't have to wait for an amendment. There was only one Bill of Rights, one right in the body of the United States Constitution, and that's habeas corpus. We've had it for 200 years, and it says if any American citizen is held in a prison unjustly, he or she may bring that condition before a federal judge, and that judge will look at the record and determine if there were violations of the Constitution in the process. And that has freed, since the death penalty came back in 1976, 40% of all people who were consigned to death rows in the United States. There would be more than 5,000 awaiting execution today, if not for the intervention of habeas corpus and the action of federal judges. They are not elected, and they serve for life. Mumia, in 19 years, has only appeared before elected judges in the state of Pennsylvania. This is the first time he's before a non-elected federal judge. And as my friends in Pennsylvania tell me, with respect to Mumia's case, there is not a judge in Pennsylvania who must stand for re-election who could free Mumia, because the politically active Fraternal Order of the Police, some 36,000 police officers strong, would see to it that that judge would lose in the next election. So Mumia's case was politically tried, racially tried, and up till now has been politically decided. And we wait to see what will happen now that we're in these federal courts. I do not want to say to you that these federal courts are fair or just. It's just that they are not as bad as the state courts. Most of these federal judges were prosecutors. Most of them were state judges. They are out of that system. The judge who will hear Mumia's case is a former prosecutor and a former state judge of the state of Pennsylvania, appointed by Bush Sr. And yet, Mumia's fate is in his hands. All of the papers have been filed. We have been waiting to hear from this judge as to when we should come to court for an oral argument. Those papers include the fact that in Mumia's case, from day one, from the moment he was arrested, having been critically shot and wounded and found in a pool of blood on the city streets in Philadelphia, from that moment on, his case received special attention. The investigation was biased. Ballistics evidence was lost. Witnesses were intimidated, compelled to testify falsely. Some have come forward to say that. Other witnesses were literally driven out of the city of Philadelphia by the Philadelphia police because they refused to say that Mumia was the shooter of the police officer who was shot on that night. Mumia's case was assigned to a judge who has put more people on death row than any sitting judge in the United States, twice as many as the judge in second place. A man who was for 16 years a deputy sheriff of the city of Philadelphia, who belonged to the same union as the police officer who was the victim. And he was prosecuted by a prosecutor who is known for having convicted an innocent man in a death case, a man named Connors, who he alleged had shotgunned and killed a young woman in the city of Philadelphia, and who was found guilty, sent to prison 10 years later. The body was exhumed, the case was reinvestigated. The young woman was not the victim of a shotgun shooting. She had been stabbed repeatedly with an ice pick, which the police had had for 10 years. The officers testified that Mumia had confessed, and yet they failed to report that confession for 63 days. But the one officer who was with Mumia that night wrote a report that night saying, "The male Negro made no comments." Wasn't that convincing to the jury? No, he was on vacation at the time of the trial, and they said they couldn't bring him to court, and the judge refused a continuance. The prosecution removed 11 qualified African-American jurors in violation of a Supreme Court decision that it is unconstitutional to remove a juror because of race. You cannot discriminate for jobs or for housing because of race. Can you discriminate in a courtroom when it comes to selecting a jury? And the United States Supreme Court said unanimously no, they did in Mumia's case. They used politics. They used the fact that Mumia had been a member of the Black Panther Party 12 years earlier when he was 16 years old, and he was tried when he was 28. Not only did they do that, but they brought out the fact that he had quoted Chairman Mao Tse-tung when he was asked about the killing by the Chicago police of Fred Hampton, and he said that what happened there was the police were doing what Chairman Mao Zedong mentioned years ago, and that is they were exercising political power out of the barrel of a gun. The prosecutor used that statement, telling the jury that Mumia, since he used that quote 12 years earlier when he was 16 years old, must have been exercising political power on the night in question when he shot the police officer. Mumia's lawyer testified that he interviewed no witnesses, did no investigation. His investigator quit the case before the trial began because the court cut off funding for the investigator. He did not have a pathologist, which he needed because the court allocated $150 for a pathologist, and the pathologist said he wouldn't, not only wouldn't he come to court for $150, he said he doesn't leave his neighborhood for $150. Mumia needed a firearms expert. The court denied him funding for a firearms expert, allocating just $150, and the expert quit the case. Can this case stand? Can this case stand? And the answer is the great writ that freed Hurricane Carter has been changed. And now, because of the change of law, there is no such thing as a viable writ of habeas corpus any longer. How did this happen? For years, the proponents of the death penalty have been trying to remove these federal judges from hearing these cases because 40% had been freed. And they never were able to get it through Congress. But in 1995, after the Oklahoma City bombing occurred and 161 victims were killed in that occasion, the United States Constitution became the 162nd victim. Because the Congress enacted an anti-terrorism and added an amendment, an Effective Death Penalty Act, which precludes these federal judges from conducting this independent review of constitutional violations. And President Carter and President Clinton, in 1996, running for re-election, signed this bill into law, stating as he signed it into law, "I have serious doubts about its constitutionality, but I'm signing it just the same," forgetting for the moment that he took an oath of office to uphold the Constitution. Not the only oath he has been careless about. And so we are concerned about this change. And we are concerned about a climate in the country that in 1999 has seen a 45% increase in the number of state executions. And we're concerned about the executions that have happened this year in 2000, including the execution of Shaka Sankofa on June 22nd in Texas. Shaka being one of four people executed this year who were, if they were guilty, and he certainly wasn't, were juveniles at the time of the offense. Shaka was 17. No other country in the world in the last 2 years has executed a juvenile, except the United States. And the United States even refuses to sign the International Covenant of the Child, which is signed by every country in the world, with the exception of the United States, because it precludes the killing of juveniles under the age of 18 for offenses committed. And if you look east of the Mississippi, you will find that there are only three states in the country that allow executions down to any age with no limitation: the state of South Carolina, the state of Louisiana, and the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And that's the context in which Mumia's case is unfolding. But at the same time, the movement to save the life of Mumia Abu-Jamal, the movement to end the death penalty, the movement for racial justice in the United States has been growing. Standing with Mumia, of course, now is Nelson Mandela, Fidel Castro, Bishop Tutu, the former president of Germany, 40 members of the Japanese Diet, 75 members of the Danish Diet. In 2 weeks, I go to Barcelona, Spain, where I'm speaking with the president of Amnesty International about the death penalty in Mumia's case. Pam Africa has just returned from France, where she met with, I believe, the foreign minister of France about the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal. And so this movement of which you are a part has grown and developed, has become major, probably the most prominent case movement and movement against the death penalty in the history of the United States. And you are a part of it, and you should be proud of it. Already, the impact of this movement is felt. Last Valentine's Day, it's strange that it happened then, but it did, the Gallup organization conducted a poll across the United States to determine attitudes in the United States about the death penalty. And they found that the support for the death penalty in the United States has now fallen to a 19-year low. Even in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we have now, as of last week, four cities which have called for a halt to executions, including Philadelphia, which voted for a halt to all executions by a vote of 12-4 in the city council. And so, if we stay strong, if we stay on course, if we stay united, our numbers will grow, and we will free Mumia, and we will end the death penalty, and we will begin to chart a course in this country which will bring about, for the first time, a genuine effort to have racial justice and class justice in America. This case is central. It's critical, it's important. Your support is very important, and let's stay strong, and let's start by getting Mumia out, but not stop there.